Well, how are you?
Good.
Doing awesome.
Rick,
check
in.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
Hey, Rick.
Good.
About to have my third cup of coffee. I'm motoring, man.
Ooh, nice.
Are you able to go to sleep at night?
I haven't slept in about a year. It's all good.
I sound about 7:30 to be about my cutoff point. My mind is racing while I'm in bed.
Oh, jeez.
Beautiful day here in Southern California.
I bet it is.
I am really pumped about this session, and we get some folks on, and we'll start here in a few minutes with a recap of the last two sessions. We'll stay in chat mode before we get into presentation mode so we can have some feedback, go back and forth. If you had opportunity to sit.
Incorrectly the first time because I got a disconnected number. I thought, oh my, I'm in trouble.
I think my wife did the same thing or a different company, but maybe when you're used to dialing 1-888 instead of 866. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just emailed everybody a summary sheet of the talking points for today's session. It's in your inbox now. You could go through it while we have this session, but definitely helps for afterwards, as well as the recording that will be coming. Rick, have you had the opportunity to schedule your first coffee meeting?
We've not done the group one as of yet. I've been pretty much on the road every week, and
wow.
just to get back last week from getting my son married in troop camp and
oh wow,
and that kind of fun stuff. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, and I've been kind of fiddling around with some secondary stuff ahead of my place. So now we're looking at doing the first coffee meeting, I believe, third weekend in May.
Nice. Just hit me up with an email if you want to run anything by me or any questions. Glad
yeah,
to help.
Definitely.
Okay.
A couple questions about making sure the venue that that's going to work. And
so. Good. Yeah, I found you on Facebook, so I'm seeing your posts there and activities with your family, and that's great stuff. It's just being part of the conversation.
Yeah, and you're right, though. One thing that's interesting, the people that get off on their little political bents and all that kind of stuff, it's real repelling.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Some of them, I'm sure I agree with. Some of them, I disagree.
I let my wife do that. She thrives off of that. She's not really a face in our business, so it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things. Someone comes in who's a goofy thinker, I'm still going to help with their money and try to convert them. You know, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As long as they're not dangerous, I guess, you know.
Got to be all things to all people, sort of.
Want to be a servant to all, just make sure they're servable, right?
Yeah. Like we've all learned we can't, there's some people that we just can't help. Especially those who don't believe they need help.
Well, I talked to Philip today. He was dialing in. I had a conversation with Christine. She said she'd be dialing in.
Excellent.
I'm here. I'm just working on it.
There she is.
Oh, hi.
Hi, guys.
I'm going to do a roll call with this feature. Stand by.
Can you hear me, Christine?
I can.
Good.
Okay. So we have Rick, Bill, Christine, and one other person.
You were the silent one on the call, I tell you.
I know. I was just hearing you guys. No, I had it on speakerphone. I'm working on this puzzle here. So I said, well, I'll come on when I need to. here I am.
Everybody still there?
Yep.
Yeah, so that was, did you all hear the roll call, or was that just me?
I did not hear it.
Oh, so that was for my ears only. Sorry, I have a little function where I can do a roll call. So there's five of us on, but only four of us have recorded our names. So we have a fourth participant who hasn't identified themselves yet.
Well, boo to them.
Okay, so Rick's here, Christine, Bill. Fourth person, you want to say hi? Okay.
Maybe you're on hold, or they're on hold.
Maybe they got us on hold. Well, heck, let's go ahead and let's get started. Welcome back. I'm going to keep us on conference here for a moment because I'd like a little interaction. Yet we definitely have a full hour or more of good stuff to cover. I've been anxious for quite a while to get to our third session. And just, again, briefly, just want to review, you know, why learn this process? Why the 180 clients process? As you're learning already, it's not a new system where you have to relearn a bunch of stuff and do things differently. But if you look at every source of business that you generate outside marketing, public programs, concierge, guest speaking, talking at schools, 401ks, or what have you, referrals and introductions, if you look at your cost per type of marketing, you will see that the introduction is by far the lowest cost, if not free, up until this point. So this cost, which is also your lowest cost, your existing client base, and if faithfully applied to your practice and it just becomes part of how you serve, we will find that rather than spending extraordinary, you can serve extraordinary and reap the benefits, again, with more profits, more business, more loyal clients at a fraction of the cost, and those costs are really only the cost of having a dinner here or there and getting some coffee for your clients and your in-house printed invitations. But again, we've got to be able to give without expecting to get immediately, knowing that those seeds that are being planted and your clients seeing your consistency, that then is going to increase their loyalty to you and to create that experience that's going to make them want to go tell others about it. So always good, you know, we've got about a month between times that we speak these signed emails. So always get to kind of go back and, you know, why are we doing this? You know, do I have something tangible with them? I can go ahead and implement.
Now joining.
Philip Nering.
And that's the way it was, folks. So thanks, good night.
Hey,
so hi.
Good.
So there you go. So by way of review, why the 180 clients. So, you know, our first session was probably the catalyst in forming the 180 clients, and that is the regular coffee meeting. Your clients will get used to, and then they will start looking forward to coming to the next coffee meeting because they know that you have a heart to teach and you have not only their best interest in mind, but you're sincerely concerned about their financial peace of mind, which goes beyond the product itself. So they feel that they are a part of something, they know they're a part of something, they bring the books with them each time, and naturally they start telling their friends and inviting their friends as well. Coffee meetings are very easy to plan, to implement, and then to gain a following. Session two was improving your online reputation. Again, free. Not a lot of work, can be pre-programmed to make it look like you're active throughout the week. But the whole point is not to rule the internet, but to make it very easy for your clients and your client introductions to find you and to find positive, reputable feedback about you, which will hopefully just crush any concerns that they may have that you are not a real person, that you're fly by night, or you're not a real company, or what have you. And the more that you use those social networks after hours, the greater your online reputation is going to be. And I see that some of you are already well on your way in using that. You know, again, it's after hours, and it's not something that I would recommend people in our industry do throughout the day, of course, unless you're on a lunch break or in the bathroom or so. Now, session three, I'm going to put us in presentation mode unless anyone has a question or comment before we dive into session three. Anybody have any questions or comments before we begin? Alrighty. I have emailed to each one of you a summary of session three so that you have both now, well, you may not need it now because you've got me, but afterwards as well, the important key points about what I'll be teaching today, and that is powerful professional partnerships. Stand by just a moment.
The conference is now in presentation mode.
All right, now I get to listen to myself. Powerful professional partnerships. Now, my most valuable relationships, professional partnerships, are my two tax preparers that I have in two different geographic regions. This may or may not apply to you, but if you really specialize in one region, then that's great. You just need one tax preparer. I have my own community here in Southern California, and then I also have a satellite office, quite a bit of business in a small town in Kentucky, and I have a tax preparer there. Very valuable. I would say that on a number of good years, last year included, upwards of 30% of my annual total production, assets under management and annuities, come from my professional partnerships with the tax preparers. It gets to be such a trusted, such a valuable relationship that, as we'll get into here, when my tax preparer partner refers a client to me, I don't want to say it's almost a done deal, but the credibility's there. It's like they have been prescribed. Here's a prescription. You need to go see Tim. And they come in on the first meeting with stacks, with proper statements after calling it. And again, they call me. I don't call them. So a very valuable relationship. But let me back up and just kind of review and mention that personally, I don't care for the approach that I was taught, though I did not do it. I heard it years ago, which is to pay a tax professional for their time, explain what it is that I do, propose that we do a seminar for their clients, and then we split the commission. I don't know if that sounds familiar to you, if you've heard approaches like that. You send them a letter and you offer to pay them $100 for their time because their time is valuable. And to me, that begins with monetizing the relationship rather than focusing on the most important thing here, and that is the proper care of your client or mutual client. So I don't see it as monetizing it at all, and I avoid that approach because really, that kind of approach is really just about money and doing more business rather than beginning and continuing to be all about what is best for the client. So as you've been learning through the 185 boot camp, when we give, we will gain later. When you have a heart to teach and you look out for your client's peace of mind, it's going to be an attraction to you, and you just can't put a price tag on that. And it's the same with partnering with other professionals. So I have found that this future relationship that you may reach out and try to build should begin and continue to be all about serving your client rather than monetizing the relationship. So when I have an initial meeting, which is a lunch or an interview, I'm interviewing federal tax preparer. I'm not talking about business. I'm not talking about, gee, what could we do together? I'm really wanting to find out how reputable they are, what services they offer, what their reputation is, and how well they treat their clients, and, of course, are they priced fairly and accordingly. Because for me, as the center of my client's financial world, which I hope that you also earn that position to be the center of your client's financial world, I want to ensure that all the other professionals serving my client serve them at the same level of integrity and efficiency that I am. So I'm going to have pre-qualified, pre-interviewed professionals that I trust in order to refer my clients to, if that makes sense. So rather than looking for a business opportunity or presenting an opportunity to someone else, I'm more like a big brother. I'm going to look and interview and screen and filter and Google the heck out of any potential preparer that I may want to refer my client to. I think everyone who has any kind of income needs to file their taxes. And just as you do a great job of bringing integrity and high ethics to your clients, I'm sure you would want the same and how they are being taken care of by other professionals. Now, I'm talking mostly of tax preparers. I personally found that to be the most valuable professional relationship. However, I do have a couple of hand-picked realtors, loan officers, and trust attorneys. I really don't get a lot from trust attorneys. I just personally want to make sure that if my client is concerned about it and I broach the subject, to get a trust done from the attorney that is most efficient at it, that doesn't have any other outside interest of selling the client anything else, or does not have any other relationship with any other annuity producer or agent, as has become kind of common. So again, the most valuable to me is the tax preparer. So I begin my search for a partner by simply asking my clients, as I meet with them, simply who prepares their taxes. And as it is probably with your process, you're doing a needs analysis and you need financial statements, and one of the key documents, of course, is their 1040 tax filing. If you review that, you can begin to look to discern whether the tax preparer is efficient or not, and most of you have probably learned to spot that anyways, and then it's really natural to ask your client how their relationship has been with him or her, to find out what the fees are. If they bring their whole tax return with you, normally it's in some kind of folder or an envelope with an invoice attached, and you can kind of get to know, as I'm sure you have in your geographic area, what becomes acceptable or common to charge for a tax return. So obviously a widowed lady on fixed income is going to be much more simpler than a younger couple who has rental properties, investments, and maybe a company. But you can begin to actually use that as a filter and kind of track which tax preparers your clients use that seem to be more favorable. To identify this person, when one or more is spoken of highly of, then I want to contact that person, introduce myself to him or her, and now's a great time because now they're probably breathing a sigh of relief, and of course your busier tax preparers are doing quarterlies and they're doing corporate returns and such, so they may be busy all year, but for the most part, the biggest wave of their season has just passed, and perhaps their guard is down, and now is a little bit of a better time for a social visit, such as a lunch. So I will call, I'll introduce myself to him or her, let them know, honestly, that I'm in the process of selecting a tax service to assist my clients with. And I don't get into, heavily at all what it is that I do. I don't do a pitch. I have to do an elevator speech. I just mentioned my name and my company. perhaps how many clients that I have, and I'm looking for a reputable service to refer them to. And I would go ahead and offer to take them to lunch to get to know their services. Before I make this call, prior to even calling this person, because I don't want to waste my time, I'm going to check out as much as I can about this person, this potential partner. I'm going to Google them, and perhaps lately you've been more active with Google than in the past. Hopefully you've Googled yourself. Do you want to Google them? Why? Because, again, you can't hide bad news or lawsuits or, you know, dirty deeds or what have you. It does come up on the Internet. So a quick review on Google. I would then check your state's insurance department and see if they have an insurance license. If they are licensed in my state or any state with life insurance, I'm not going to call that person. I'm not even going to go there. Because their chances are their allegiance is not solely on preparing taxes for $300. You'd rather get a $3,000 commission selling an annuity. And that, again, is unfortunately becoming a bit more commonplace now. So that is... that's kind of number one on the filter, is make sure that they do not have a life license. I want to make sure that they don't have a securities license. Again, their allegiance is mixed and spread out. They're going to do their tax return and say, hey, by the way, you should do an IRA. Let's do this variable annuity. I don't even want to go there. Next, speak to the next person. You want to Google, you want to check the your state's insurance department. And really, anything else, I don't hold a lot of credence to Better Business Bureau myself. It's more of a good old boys club. You pay them, then you automatically start with a high rating. Again, I really believe that Google and the voice of the cloud is going to replace BBB. Again, because if someone breaks a law or mistreats a client, it's going to show up, perhaps even more transparent, Better Business Bureau. So do a little bit of homework, screen the person before you call, and invite them to lunch. So when you've met and you've interviewed a tax person who also believes and shares your same values, that's the key. You may have heard of the saying, you know, be not unequally yoked. You know, that's true in partnerships, if you're going to go into business with someone, as it is obviously in marriage. But when you are handpicking a professional whom you're going to entrust to properly take care of your client, not to have any ulterior motive, then you really need to share the same values, and that just really comes from kind of having a casual lunch. You want to make sure and find out about their pricing, again, their reputation. And then, you know, it may take 3 or 4 lunches. You know, I don't recommend trying to impress them and trying to go to the most costly place. You know, you may want to go to a trendy place, that's fine. But during the meeting, you know, just focus on them. Don't do a lot. Don't do any selling of you outside of introducing yourself. Simply what you specialize in, perhaps how long you've been doing what you've been doing, and maybe the number of clients that you have that you're concerned with that you want them to be with the right tax preparer. So this is going to kind of put the guest at your lunch to put their best foot forward and to tell you all about their business. And, you know, I'm sure you've probably interviewed staff personnel before, so I'm sure you kind of know the right kind of questions to ask without putting them in a spot. Just be comfortable, and I'm sure you all have been in business long enough to kind of pick up on body language, voice inflection. You kind of know where they're coming from, whether they're, you know, looking to get the next sell, or whether they have a heart like you do to take care of the client and put them first. And so once you have one or two persons, ideally one, in your area that you decided you're going to go ahead and pursue a relationship with, here's how you start that. It's kind of like dating a member of the opposite sex, except you're not asking someone out on the first date. When you do have your first date, which could be this lunch, you're not hoping in the back of your mind to get to third base. You're not hoping for a home run or get to second base. You're only kind of getting the feel, getting to know the person. If you feel after having this lunch and done your research, like, yeah, that's a stand-up person right there. I think they will definitely take care of my client properly and not sell them away to someone else, and they're going to be fair and reputable. Then what I do is I look for an opportunity to initiate our relationship by sending one of my clients to them. How do you do that? Well, you meet with your clients pretty regularly, either a new client or you've got an annual review coming up and you're always bringing up the subject, hopefully you are, of taxes, especially as it's so fresh in their minds right now. Hey, how'd your tax return go for 2010? Let's have a look and, you know, let's make sure you're efficient. And then when you see the opportunity, someone's being overcharged or they're preparing it themselves on TurboTax or their brother-in-law did it and they're missing stuff and they're not being efficient, then you can, in good conscience and with a clean heart, recommend that they go see so-and-so. And perhaps by then you already have one or two of their cards, refer them. And then I would send, I like to send a handwritten note, not an email, not a Word document with my wet signature, but a handwritten note. Great meeting you the other day for lunch. Appreciate the time. You can be sharing your services with me. I do believe that you can do, a great service to my clients. I am referring one of my best clients, Eddie Johnson. Here's your situation. I don't share her situation, but, you know, don't get into financials or anything, but you may say, I believe she's being overcharged, or I believe the person who prepared her taxes, you know, missed a few things, and let them know ahead of time. You're giving them a referral. So the relationship starts by giving. You, in essence, are helping their business and really disarming them by presenting them a gift of your trust, your confidence, and one of your clients. We've all heard, and I'm sure believe, that of all professionals, really accountants, tax preparers are really protective, like a shepherd to their sheep, of their clients. And taking any kind of approach like, hey, how many clients you got, or hey, won't we do a public program for your clients? I got a great idea. You know, man, they're just going to zip up right away, and that door is going to be closed. So we start that relationship by presenting that gift. And, you know, follow up, make sure that your client has scheduled a time. Now, one question you may have is, well, we've already filed taxes. Are we going to wait till next April? Here's another great opportunity. If, according to your discernment, you're seeing something that has been overlooked or they're being overcharged, maybe they're not finding all the deductions, then I would ask this person that you just met what they would charge, if anything. Just review someone's existing return to look for efficiencies or inefficiencies. And, you know, if they're missing something, we, of course, want you to go ahead and file the amendment or do a correction and go ahead and keep on this client now. And if it's $35 or $40 and that's kind of customary, I would offer to pay that. Now, you may not want to do that to 100 clients, but just, you know, one or two to get started, because you're accomplishing two things. You're showing your client, hey, I care, and I want you to be efficient with your taxes. Here's a person that is very competent in doing so, and they're very they're reputable, and they're very fair as far as the pricing. And so this begins a relationship with you, of course, giving first. Now, as with any long-term relationship, it's kind of like dating. You don't want to try to push things along too fast, because it's kind of nature to our industry or what we've been taught before. We do want to get to third base quicker. We do want to get to home base. We want to say, well, hey, what can we do to work together? How about, you know, we do a program for your client? Don't go there. I have not once in 8 years of having my tax professional relationships. I've not once approached them to do a program, a seminar for their clients. I have, however, invited not only my tax partner to my coffee events, to my evening classes, and that is session 4 we'll be teaching next month, and I also provide them plenty of extra invitations for them to display in their office. Again, the trust on their behalf begins to grow once they see I put my trust in them by sharing one of my clients with them, and then another, and then another. And again, it's got to be, you know, an act of goodwill and faith that they see that you trust them and you are helping their business. Now, when you invite them to your next coffee meeting, your tax professional, you do so just to say, you know, one of the ways that I serve my clients, I keep them in the know, and they have financial peace of mind is we get together for coffee on a quarterly basis, and I address current affairs, current events that cause them concern, and we even teach them to be tax efficient, so hopefully your job's easier as well. I'd love for you to be my guest on our next one. I'll even gladly introduce you to my clients. You can say hi and such, and just invite them to your next coffee meeting. Don't make it about them. You go ahead and teach what you're going to teach, and either before or after the topic that you're teaching, they also want to introduce you to our tax partner here. He's of such and such tax services. Been serving our community for 14 years, and we have his card here for you. Just give him a little shout out. Imagine what that does in his mind and his heart. Plus, he just got to witness how you serve your client, and he or she just witnessed that you gave to your clients. You taught your clients. You did not put your hand out at the end and ask for something in return. You did not say, okay, now, that's it, here's going to be collecting your response sheets. Make sure to check yes. None of that. That's going to go a long way with your tax preparer, because guess what? They still receive themselves. They receive the free lunch invites and seminars. They know what some industries do, you know, and most of them have not aligned themselves with that. So they're going to be able to see your heart and the way you serve your clients. And when it comes to financial planning, financial recommendations, financial coaching, they, of course, should naturally want their clients to be treated the same way, which, again, builds that bridge and opens the door for them to start referring clients to you. Again, when I start receiving introductions from my tax preparer, I know that it is a AAA-plus introduction. And again, they're calling me. And as always, I'm going to go above and beyond, if there is such a thing, beyond what I normally do anyways, and give them great service. But I know they're going to go back and let their tax preparer know how their experience is with me. And I'm also going to keep track in my client database, whichever software you use, just put a little note or an extra field recommended by tax preparer so that you remember who referred them to you. Because, again, you want to take care of that tax professional and not accidentally refer this client who may become your client, but 3 years down the road, you slip them the wrong card or introduce them to the wrong person. You want to protect that relationship and remember who referred you referred them to you. Well, as you have begun experiencing, you know, this money client process is a bit unconventional compared to modern practices. We're giving first with faith that your clients will introduce new clients to you. I can't stress enough just how important that this courtship is with you and this prospective partner. Not to rush it. We don't want any doors closed. We don't want a game over if they sense for a moment that you're after their clients or you start asking about their clients. Earn it. It's like these sessions are teaching you to give and to earn the position of the center of your client's financial world, earn the position of their coach, you earn your client's introductions, and you will earn, by the same token, introductions from this tax professional. Now, I stay away from big box companies. I do. I like to have the locally owned, family owned. You know, your community normally gets into that a little bit more and appreciates that more. And I think that person's going to be able to think for themselves a lot more than someone at, you know, Tax Preparers of America or whomever that may be. Let me get back to the reason I have two territories. I don't want to have two tax preparers within even a couple of hours driving of each other. I would never want to mistakenly refer one of my clients to another tax preparer if they happen to know or are in the general vicinity of my other tax preparer. So I have one in California, and I happen to have business in Kentucky. So if you happen to service two distinctly different areas, not zip code, but you know they are a good distance from each other, different counties, different states. I know a lot of us in the annuity business have non-resident licenses. I've got about 13, but my main business is in Kentucky, Ohio, and I have a relationship there. And I had built and started that relationship the same way I did here in California. Why Kentucky? Well, my wife's from Kentucky, and of course, naturally, she's got family there. So every time we go on vacation, I want a tax write-off, so I talk business. And I just started by introductions from her family, starting to build up back in 1999 some clients there. And so the same process as I flew out there to serve my clients, asked who their tax preparer is, and small town Kentucky didn't take long to the most, you know, reputable, well-known tax preparer without a big box location, and started referring clients to him and built a relationship. And just as with dating and courtship, as you spend time together or time passes and you refer business to him, trust builds, and they go to some of your coffee meetings, some of your evening classes. In time, they're really going to get behind who it is that you are, what you represent, and how you serve your clients. And they're going to want to be on board with that. I never have to resell myself to my tax professional, and they are among the most valuable relationships that I have. Now, besides what we've already mentioned, you know, you, of course, want to remember your tax preparers, your professional partners, birthday and anniversary. But what I like to do around Christmas time is I'll have a nice dinner for my staff at a restaurant with a nice separate room, private room, and I like to invite our partners, and we include them. And again, so they feel part of the family, they see the love and how I take care of my staff, how I appreciate them, and there's a gift, and there's dinner, and there's music. And so there's a fine line between, you know, going overboard with lavish gifts and just really showing, you know, love and appreciation. Of course, we remember them on special occasions, but then again, it says a lot, and it goes a long way when you include them in something so special. You know, around Christmas time, our hearts are all warm and fuzzy, and it's a time to be with family and to just appreciate life. And you know, so it's a sentimental time already, and that's going to be a great dinner that they remember. We like to do something kind of unique each year. And one memorable year, we had crystal vases, vases, however you like to say. They're just smooth cylinder to hold roses or what have you. And then we had etched in like a sandblasting our logo and, you know, financial compass down at the bottom, about two-thirds of the way down, so it wasn't so overwhelming that when someone looked at the flowers, distracted by the the etching, but it was classy, and it was something that they remembered the time by. And you take care of those partners. So, and I guess in summary, just like any long-lasting relationship, if you look back and courting your spouse when applicable, I may be sticking my foot in my mouth here, but I don't know if it was love and first sight for you, one date and boom, you got married, or you took some time and you courted. And the same thing is with this, professionals. Not a one-night stand. Long-term relationship. So that, you've got the notes there on the finding and building professional, powerful professional partnerships. And now, I'll share with you a bonus. If you have your email, then you see here, and we still have time, a little bonus section for you here. And that is, I do something very different for my clients than is expected. And that is, let's start with birthdays. I pull up 2 months of birthdays in advance. So on my desk, now I've got April, I've got May. April, the beginning of April, and I have both months. I'm looking for clients that have birthdays coming up. Now, depending on how long you've been serving your clients or been in business, you've gotten to know your clients. You know that some just won't go to anything else that you do. They're fine with their product, but they're really not social. They're not involved or what have you. Never heard from them again. But hopefully the one that you're in touch with, I want to take the opportunity to honor them for their birthday. I will call a couple of weeks ahead of time, 2-3 weeks, generally not longer than 3 weeks. I will call and ask to speak to the spouse, the one who's not having the birthday, and say something like, Phyllis, hey, how are you? Tim Rosen. I don't have to say Tim Rosen with financial purpose because they already know Tim Rosen. I work hard at that. All I have to do sometimes is just say, hi, Tim. Little small talk. How's everyone? Wonderful. Look, I know that Ted's birthday is coming up in a couple of weeks. Let them respond. Then I say, would you allow us to honor Ted by hosting a dinner for the two of you and some of your closest friends? I've not had one person say no. So I'm planning and I'm offering to host a wonderful dinner with a handful of their closest friends, and I like to say that, who will join us in honoring Ted for his birthday. Now, of course, since you have it on your desk, you know his birthday, and I want to give the benefit of the doubt, be respectful, and not choose the night of his birthday. I'll say something to the fact that, because I understand it, you may have family plans for his birthday. It's on a Tuesday. How would Tuesday after his birthday, would we do that? Again, I've not had anyone say no. I have, however, had them break down in tears right then and there on the phone that they were touched that we would do such a thing. I'm not doing a business meeting. We're just taking them out to dinner and honoring them for their birthday. Just that. I've called men who have said, oh, crap, that's right. It's your birthday, huh? Oh, man, you just saved me. Wow, would that be great? I haven't had time to do anything. You would do that? Why would you do that? Hey, we appreciate you. We just want to honor you. You don't talk further. You don't say, well, you've got $1 million with it. What do you think? We just want to honor you. You pick a restaurant. Pick a nice restaurant. Nice doesn't have to mean the most expensive, but a nice atmosphere, nice ambiance. And ideally, I always choose a restaurant that has one of those private rooms or a room off to the side that, can seat and travel or what have you. And once the spouse agrees and we agree on the time, then I give them a little help. I say, we'll plan all the details. Let's go ahead and we're going to do a Chateau Le Chien or whatever the name of the restaurant you've already chosen. And let them know, 6:30, we'll have it all planned. All you need to do is go ahead and invite your, two or three couples, your closest friends, and just let me know by next week which of your friends will be joining us. We want to make it a special night, and we want to have everything just right and know exactly who's coming. So you've already set in motion that you're planning all the details. All they have to do is provide you names, Now, the reason why I want names, I'm not going to make any contacts. I just want to know how many people are going to be there. And I want them to make the effort, of course, to call and invite their friends. Now, they're not saying, gee whiz, our financial person is putting something on, can you go? They're just saying, hey, we're having a dinner. Birthday benefit said, we're honoring him. We'd love for you to come. Can you come? And guess what? What do most people in their 50s and 60s like to do with their other friends of their age besides golf and travel, of course? Hey, we like to eat. Eating is a human experience that is enjoyable. We make memories. And so that's their part. Your part, along with your office, is you talk with the restaurant ahead of time, introduce yourself, of course, let them know what you're planning and what date, and make sure to go ahead and book that room and make sure that that is squared away. And definitely let them know, you know, I plan on doing a number of these on a regular basis. Let them be the good person and offer you a discount or offer you anything special. You, again, are giving to them by letting them know you're going to be bringing them some business. Check their menu if they have a menu that can be taken with you or viewed online. Go ahead and pick about 4 to 5 different dishes and have a variety. Maybe have something in seafood, have some beef, have some chicken, have pasta, and a vegetarian plate. Because what you want to avoid is, during this dinner, it's all about the guest of honor. It's all about honoring them. You don't want any unnecessary lengthy time of going through the menu and having people. You don't want the order-taking process too long and drawn out. Make it simple, 5 nice selections, kind of across the board, make a choice of 2 different desserts. And what you do is, on a quarter page or maybe a half page, I've done this in my office, got some nice colored or parchment-looking paper, 2 per page, and I would print up the menu. And the header would read Ted's 65th birthday. Smaller font underneath that, hosted by or gladly hosted by Financial Compass, Tim Rosen, Rick Redding, your name there. That's the only mention of the name of you or your company throughout the dinner. And those are just placed, the table setting before them. They're looking at the menu. You know what? It's nice for the birthday couple to have that as a keepsake to take home. And maybe take some pictures. Have your spouse take some pictures. But the key is, during the dinner, just focus on the guest of honor. Talk about them. Be social. What it is not an opportunity for you to talk about business, to talk about you, or to give an elevator speech, or just to say, hey, we provide a solution for tomorrow's peace of mind. No. The whole key is their guests aren't going to hear a peep out of you about business. Because guess what? They're human too, and they have a mind, and they have a detector, and they can sense when someone's putting on doing something to get something in return, a little quid pro quo, or whether you're truly honoring them. Now, with such an experience, and again, this whole 180 clients process is about creating the experience. You had a nice dinner like that. Everyone remembers. But they're not going to remember you pitching your wares or talking money or talking about the market or talking about how bad 401ks are or variable annuities. None of that. Well, we're talking about him and silly memories he has and things about the family. And you're going to learn a lot more from your clients than you had in your office. You're going to learn more about the guests there. And you know what the key is? Let the guests ask the birthday boy afterwards, who was that guy? What should they say? They better be singing your praises. Let them do that. It is so much more valuable and effective when your client, whom you honored without expecting anything in return, says, oh, man, he's so great to us. He's been serving us here for a couple of years. We have peace of mind. And I'll tell you what, you got any questions or concerns, he's the person to go see. Right there is the stamp of approval that you need versus you whipping out your card and saying, hey, here's my card. If you ever get, speak about the, losing enough in the market. None of that. I mean, have a couple of cards with you. Do not talk about it. Do not hand them out. At the dinner table, if everyone's leaving and they happen to say, hey, do you have a card? slip them a card and say, ask any questions like, well, so what do you do? Or what do you charge? Or, you know, what's your relationship with Ted? I always refer back to Ted. I said, yeah, I'm sure Ted will tell you all about it. It was great meeting you, Peter. And you know what? You're passing their litmus test. And so, again, it's keeping it all about the client. Stand by.
Presentation is now disabled.
Lastly, retirement. Boy, I love to do retirement parties, and they're kind of few and far between sometimes, depending on how long or what point you get to have the honor of taking on a client. When I know one of my clients is going to retire ahead of time, that's got to be one of the most exciting things in life, short of marriage and having a child. You know, you work 30, 35 years to prepare for that. So, again, I will contact the spouse of the pre-retiree ahead of time. Something like this, you may want to, you know, kind of plan a month or two ahead of time and let them know, hey, this is Tim. Oh, hi. You know, Paul was so excited about Ted's retiring coming up. Hey, are you ready? You ready to have him at home? Hey, we just want to honor him, and we'd like to host a retirement dinner. Don't say retirement party, because that can get out of hand, and that can raise unrealistic expectations. But we're going to plan a dinner the same way we planned the birthday. Boy, you know, we just want to honor him that night with you and your closest friends, and go through the same steps that we've already went through on the birthday, but maybe have more people or so. We say, you know what, we'll plan the dinner and everything, and you just get the guest list together, your closest friends. I don't say family and the band kids and everything. We talk about, you know, you're using terms such as it'd be a nice social dinner with your best friends. And again, lined up with the restaurant. You have to have a private room for this retirement dinner. Retirement dinner, I'd take a couple of extra steps. I like to have live music. I have two of my favorite guitarists out here that'll do some flamenco guitar, some acoustic, or there's even a great saxophonist out here. You don't want them right up in your client's ear. You have to have enough room so they're, you know, towards them, towards the side or in the back where they can have some nice background music. And again, that just adds to a memorable time at the dinner, a party. And again, maybe present them with a bottle of wine if that is up your alley, or something else commendable like that. What I also do that makes the retirement party very memorable and really touches the hearts of my clients is I have two favorite photographers out here. I capture every event I do. I always have a photographer. I'm teaching a class. I have a photographer. I have a ribbon cutting for my office. I have a photographer. Book signing event, whatever. I have a photographer. And so I will have this dinner photographed. And you may say, well, not a lot going on. Really, you got me with spaghetti in my mouth. And not a lot to take pictures up. Yeah, but you have them take pictures of when people are coming in. You know, just the surprise and the gleeful look on the guest of honor. The picture of the musician playing, the favorite waitress, a group photo of everyone sitting and eating. Then after dinner, have your photographer take pictures of you shaking hands or hugging the retiree, and then them hugging their friends, and get a good number of pictures. Then what I do is I will have made a commemorative book for them. And with today's technology, I happen to use Mac computers, and I use iPhoto, and right at the bottom there's a menu, you know, boom, click a memory book, and you build a memory book, you put the pictures in whatever order, and then you can put little sayings, here's the retiree boy, whatever you want to say, so 35 years finally, and, you know, just a little, you can make little comments on different pictures, don't go overboard, you know, and at the end, you know, congratulations from Rick. Congratulations with love from Christine. And then, you know, a week or so after the event, invite them into your office to present them with that book. I've seen tears. It's just very touching. And now they have, you know, a physical reminder of such a wonderful time that they had. I don't expect anything in return, except the obviously the natural gained increased loyalty of the clients and introductions, which I continue to get on a regular basis. I have unmuted everybody, and I have talked without stopping. So thankfully, you have had some notes and talking points to follow along. So let's open this up to any questions or comments.
Hey, Tim.
Yeah,
a quick question, just thinking through it. I really like the retirement party idea. I mean, the birthday sounds like that'd be very, very quaint as well. With the retirement, help me understand that. What are the parameters on that? I mean, are they generally inviting 10 people, 20 people? I mean, are they just inviting special people? They're not doing the flash mob thing, right?
Correct. And it's all in your setup and your language. I've only had one time where a client brought their, you know, their kids or grandkids, but their kids were in their 40s, and I'm helping them now. So I mean, you don't want kids. But it is all in your language. We'd love for you to invite your closest friends, those that you would normally go out to eat with, and on a retiree, maybe some of your, you know, definitely some of your coworkers. What does that do? That's a filter right there. So if they're a coworker, they're putting into the same 401k plan. They've been working together all these years. Now they're being introduced to his retirement planner, retirement planner, which is great dinner, and the connection is made. So for the retirement, I would say, some of your coworkers and some of your best friends, and then you may want to say, you know, I've got a room reserved about, you know, 14 or 16. So you're right there, you're already letting them know, have a parameter so they're not bringing 100 people.
Well, you know, this is exciting. And funny that this came up today because I'm in the process of doing a weekly visit and a weekly adding a leg under the table with a local pharmacist, works up the Safeway Pharmacy, and he and his wife are referrals from a really, really, introduction, I should say, from a very happy, satisfied client. And, I mean,
wow.
You know, we have our obligatory couple of meetings, and here's what we do, here's what we believe we're strong in, and here's what we'll try to do for you. And it didn't take very long because of that credibility. We are right now halfway through moving the whole $1.2 million. And,
wow.
And it's what's really cool is we've been able to, based on doing some preliminary planning with our software, he can very easily, and he already put the paperwork in this week, he's going to retire in 3 months. So
that's awesome.
I'm so excited because he's so grateful that I've given him a piece of money. He was a do-it-yourselfer his whole life, too. He just couldn't take the pressure anymore.
Yeah.
And so this is, guys, this is going to be my first. I know his wife will accept the opportunity to put together this kind of an event for him. I'm sure she will.
Yeah, especially if you haven't moved assets yet. Great. You plan it right now. Yeah.
With him, yeah, I mean, with him, we're halfway through. We've got $500,000 already in process. And,
oh, you're already good.
Yeah, so he's already a client, but I'm thinking, wow, I think that'd be such a fun time.
Absolutely, and he already knows your bedside manner, so to speak, how you operate, how you don't sell, how you're a great listener and find the needs and really do your due diligence to really spell out specifically that he can retire and how he can have peace of mind. That's enough for him to share in his own words after the fact, after a retirement dinner with his guest when they ask him. And that's the key is having them, leaving it up to them to ask him, who is this guy? Why did he do this for you? What does he do? Better it come from his mouth than yours.
That's
great.
That way I'm not my own PR agent, you bet.
There you go.
That's
awesome. Sure. Does anybody already have tax professional partnerships?
I do.
Hello.
Philip. I do.
Very good. Has that been a good source for you?
About 48% of last year.
Just 48. Very good. Great testimony to the value of that relationship.
Unbelievable.
Mile High City there. Do you just cover basically one big area, or do you go to other areas as well?
Well, I've got a real interesting situation. I've got three accountants.
Okay.
They all like different types of clients.
Yeah.
I've been working with them now for quite a while. Some of them longer than others. And they all know each other. And they all know that I work with all of them. And they're all happy with that. Because
that's good.
I actually had one of them call me up and say, I know you've got a guy that can help the client, but it's just not my kind of client.
There is a specialty. Good.
And it was...
The same thing is with attorneys.
Yeah. I've got a couple of those I'm starting. You know, one of them actually is a tax attorney, and that's started into a great relationship there.
Anyone else have any questions on the seeking out or the building of a professional partnership?
Yeah, I have a question, Tim.
Yeah.
The one thing is, you know, some of us, I've elected and I've been pretty happy with it. You know, we're adding in, at this point, we're adding in the sound tax program. But we're not excluding the idea of working with, especially for people that have much more complex situations, just, you know, maintaining a good steady stream of referral out to full-blown CPA firms. I'm kind of curious. You mentioned that the attorneys, you don't get much traction out of the attorneys. Does that seem to be a pretty common theme when you talk to advisors?
Yes, and I believe that perhaps there's more financial advisors than there are trust attorneys, so it's common for an attorney that specializes in trust to be working with a half a dozen or more financial advisors. So a reputable one is going to say, look, I can't spread my allegiance out, and I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, so I just can't give referrals. The one I work with is kind of that way, so when I say I work with them, it's because I want my client to have their trust done right. I don't want them overcharged. I don't want it to do it yourself. I don't want him having any ulterior motive. He's competent. It's done right. They don't go to probate. So because I'm looking out for my clients, then I send them to him, and I often go to the meetings, the attorney's office with him. So I started in this industry working for a company that had two divisions, a legal division that did trust and an annuity division. And unfortunately, I mean, I always believed in what I was doing and helping people and protecting people, but greed was their downfall, and I was able to start my own business before they went out of business. But they would do trust, and they were done right. But, again, they did it as a backdoor opportunity to say, hey, you need an annuity. And so that was kind of my background and my experience with trust and how closely related they can be with annuities if not done right. And so a lot of the attorneys I've found out here, you know, they just have too many relationships with other financial advisors. I would not trust sending my clients to them for the concern that they may be contacted by one of their financial buddies, vice versa. So I don't have a relationship where it's reciprocal, where I'm getting introductions from a trust attorney. Nonetheless, I want my clients taken care of properly. So I have screened out the one that I do trust, and I'll go to the meeting with them. I do have reciprocal relationships with loan officers for refinancing needs. And, you know, even older folks, you know, need to sell their house sometimes and scale down, and I want them with the right reputable realtor as well. It's funny, what happens with realtors, rather than getting a lot of introductions from their clients, realtors don't always get into the financial end of it, loan officers do. I end up getting a lot of their coworkers and other realtors coming to me. So I started with one realtor I give referrals, so she's referred me. I think I have about four or five of her coworkers as clients now. And so it can be reciprocal that way.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And it all stems from you having a true legitimate concern that your clients are taken care of with the utmost integrity and ethics by other professional areas. And you've done your pre-screening and your name's on the line too, and so I don't take that lightly at all before I refer someone. But I have found that definitely the tax professionals I have, as Philip has mentioned too, is a huge, huge part of my business. And I don't have to ask them for business. I don't have to put on a special program for their clients. They just know what I'm about and how they take care of, and how I take care of their clients. And so now with dozens of shared clients, they always hear back every tax season, you know, they sing my praises back to my tax department, which all the more keeps my name at the top of their mind and really reinforces how pleased they are to have me as their partner. And that's going to continue to build for you all as well. You've got extraordinary birthday events, extraordinary retirement events. You can definitely do the same thing for anniversaries. Just keep track. It's easy to do an Excel spreadsheet of who you've done birthdays for so you don't forget and invite the same person. That may not happen, but even with the birthday cards that we send out, I always change them once a year every March. So no one gets the same birthday card 2 years in a row. Whether or not they would notice that, I know that it would be the same, so I always keep that different. Keep track of who you've done a dinner with for a birthday, for an anniversary, and for retirement. I am doing some, I continue to try and to test other areas of bringing value and service and honoring my clients. I've done a type of adult event that I will report on later. I'll always, you know, put my neck out and try it first. And sometimes they succeed, sometimes they fail. But before I recommend it, we're going to test all angles of it. So sometimes golf can be a good thing without having to necessarily put on a $6,000 golf tournament. So you've got a few more things now in your belt that you can do. And see, when we first started this, I did mention that these are things that you can just look at the calendar and start doing right away. With enough clients, you've got some people with birthdays this month, birthdays next month. And again, working this in between what you're already doing for a very low cost. My average dinner, have taken out some clients, under $300. Yet, you know, we've got 10, 12 people there who had an awesome experience that they'll continue to talk about. And I get introductions. You talk about return on investment. I'd rather and choose to continue to do what I do versus ever going back to what I did before. I would rather continue to nurture and strengthen these relationships, serve, honor them, and just continue to enjoy the natural reaping and sowing of getting introductions. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but before you lose that thought, what kind of restaurants, I mean, do you have a tip on which restaurants, what kind of an
environment? I use non-big box restaurants, so I like the locally owned. There are a couple of bistros out here where they're semi-dark, but they're nice, very well decorated, the decor is nice, and the music's right, the food is of top quality, and it doesn't have to be a fortune. I mean, probably the average thing on the menu is maybe $21 or so. But that's using a variety of different things on the menu. And that's fine, because what we have to remember is you're not feeding a seminar crowd of 35 or 40. It's 12. And even if you're paying, you know, $20, $25, the key is, if it's in the area that they live in, they know the area, and they know that it's a nice restaurant, or they know that it has a bad reputation. So there happens to be two restaurants here in my area that have a special side room that, yes, some people do for meetings, but also for private parties. I don't have to pay an extra dime for that room, especially when you let the restaurant's proprietor know that you plan on doing this regularly. Especially if you come prepared with 2 days. I've got one coming up two days from now, and I've got one in, a day or what have you. They're generally, especially in today's economy, more than obliged to have you there. So I only just pay the menu price, plus, of course, you know, they require 18%, and I normally take care of them when you're 25% or so, the wait staff, because then they're so anxious to have you back. So, yeah, I would say, you know, classy to the point where it's just comfortable and it's enjoyable. You know, it's not a loud Mimi's Cafe or anything, and I don't go to the big box, the Nationwide brand stores, restaurants at all. Hope that answers your question.
Yes, sir.
Excellent. As always, shoot me an email. You know, I consider to be one of your coaches in this process, so, you know, let me know if you have questions. I have taken questions from you all before, and those who have asked me questions, you know, I've gotten back to you promptly, and hopefully went above and beyond answering your question to help you with anything that we're teaching. And certainly like to hear your feedback as well, what you have planned, how it went, you know, invites that you send, birthdays, any questions or ideas, just shoot me an email. I generally get back to you that same day. Okay, well, it's been a good time, and I hope these are some of the things that you can get back to the office on tomorrow. Look at the calendar. If you're client database, I'm sure you've got a query where you can hit a button or two and find out who's got birthdays coming up in May, because that would be a good time to start planning those and ask me questions, keep you posted. And do me a favor, please, when you do have a birthday dinner, share some feedback with me. I'd love to hear how that goes. And then, of course, our next call and our final segment will be on evening classes and the curriculum and why and how we do that, and that's going to be the third Wednesday in May. All right, guys, go get them. Enjoy their time tonight, and we will hear from you all on email.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank
you. You guys, within 48 hours, we'll get you a recording of this call.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
All right, have a good night, everyone.
Bye.
The conference is now in presentation mode. Presentation mode is now disabled.